Hello and welcome to Platforms and Pitfalls. I'm Rowan.
And I'm Blue.
Platforms and Pitfalls is a game design podcast where we look at how five different games approach an idea. And this month, we're looking at combos. We're going to be looking at some of the different kinds of combos in games, exploring three genres, fighting games, character action games, and RPGs, and seeing how these games use combos to encourage different player behavior. So I guess we should start with a very quick, what is a combo? I see combos in the context we're looking at them as sort of a cumulative set of actions that builds into something, traditionally. Does that sound about right for you for this conversation?
Yeah, I definitely have a much more vague feeling for what combos are to me, and it's just...
To be fair, that's because it's a vague thing in a lot of games.
Yeah, and it really gets shown off as we go through our list of games today, but it's just player action that builds on player action. A way for the game to like communicate how you're doing, right?
Yeah, that's true. It's a way to communicate that you're doing well because it's letting you do these things that build on each other.
And I think that one of the important aspects of combos is the power fantasy associated with it, because you get this feeling of, oh, I'm so good. I can do all of these things back to back, and I have total control of the situation. Because a lot of what combos is control. It's having your turn and just doing the things that you want to do to further your game plan.
And it also, there's an aspect of going beyond what's allowed with combos, even if they're designed for it. Like, a lot of the time, we think of, like, you know, you do a punch. And when you get to do, like, your three-hit combo, it feels just a bit nicer. It feels like you've broken the system somehow, even though it's built for that. And just as certain games in particular just go further and further with this sort of thing, it just feels better and better to be like, wow, I can do all this stuff and it feels like it's broken. And so our first game has a very great sense of a feeling like you're breaking the system, but being very balanced around that, which is Melty Bloods. Melty Bloods. Technically not the most obscure game we've talked about, although perhaps the least sensibly titled. Melty Bloods, a 2002 2D Japanese indie fighter by Frenchbred that's been constantly updated since its original release. Originally based on Type Moon's first hit, The Erotic Descent into Madness Over Murder, vampire visual novel, Tsukihime. So, Melty Blood has a very dynamic and fluid combo system that allows you to do an awful lot, but let's just use Melty Blood to talk about how fighting games do combos as a general function.
This has roots in the original Street Fighter. Well, the original. Yeah, the original Street Fighter 2, because there are multiple iterations of that game where you were able to hit an opponent multiple times without them being able to react. And that actually wasn't in the original design. That was a very happy mistake that happened.
And a lot of other developers have talked about how that was an inspiration to them, and even Capcom's own staff decided to make it work as a deliberate mechanic as opposed to an accidental thing that they tried to patch out later.
And so fighting games were never the same again. It went from this honorable rock, paper, scissors of I'm going to hit you and I'm going to react and then one of us will win and then we'll reset and do it again into I'm going to hit you and there's nothing you can do about it.
If you didn't hit block the first hit, then that's it. You take the extra Hadouken or something. So combo structure in a lot of the fighting games like Melty Blood usually starts with getting an initial grounded hit or starting in from an aerial jump in and then doing a short series of moves to get them into an aerial state and continuing from there. And throughout this, you can usually cancel weaker moves into stronger moves, and you can usually cancel normal moves into specials. And there are various ways to manipulate these systems to get them back in the air a second time and any number of things, but generally in Melty Blood, though, combos are really fast and really rapid, and you have to learn a certain minimum complexity to do any, like, acceptable amount of damage. It's not hard to hit that minimum threshold, but it's not trivial, as I'm sure you remember.
Yeah, no, it is something that you have to make conscious effort towards. Most players that get into a fighting game and just button mash, they're not going to hit that minimum damage. A term in the fighting game community is B&B, bread and butter. And that is, under ideal circumstances, what combo are you just going to do 90% of the time? You're not going to be able to button mash your way into a B&B in Melty.
And that's true in most 2D fighting games, actually. That's true in all games, but it feels even more true in a lot of 2D fighting games.
The kind of skill, not requirement, but like skill test, right, to see how well you do in Melty Blood is just not only understanding the combo system, but understanding the flow of combos in general. Because sure, on the side of you performing it, you need to know what buttons to hit, in what order, in what rhythm. But then on the other side of it, when you are being comboed, like, you shouldn't just check out of the game at that point. You should be looking for the gap. Where does this... And that's where combos kind of get interesting to me. It's not just this one-sided thing. There is something to consider from the other side as well. So the first level is just, oh, when is this combo going to end and when can it be my turn again? I need to be ready for when that happens. Whether it's I'm just going to hold back because I think that they're going to try to continue and reset the combo, or if it's I'm going to find an opportunity to jab my way out and find a way into this game.
And before we go on further, let's just define that use of the word reset, which we both understand in the fighting game context pretty clearly, but for everyone else, so a reset is when you deliberately stop doing a combo in order to hopefully get the opponent unaware and do a new mix-up, as in cause a situation where they have to guess one of at least two outcomes and perhaps get a new fresh combo. Because most combos in most fighting games have some kind of limiting system that stops things going for infinites or stops them going for ridiculous damage if you can just keep doing it.
You don't want to kill someone in one hit is the design of a fighting game. That's not fun. Now, that's really kind of the simple level of it, right? Like, so the level one is just on the side of the player getting hit, when is it my turn again? And then the next layer up is, are they thinking about this from the side of the player doing the combo? Is my opponent thinking about when they can try to steal back their turn, try to take the advantage in the game, the initiative in the game again? And how can I play on that? It just stacks on itself all the way down. And it's a term called Yomi in fighting games. Like, how deeply are you in your opponent's mind to understand their mindset? So although combos look extremely single-sided and just this one-player game, even in a game as simple as Melty Blood, where, yeah, your opponent doesn't really have many options out of a combo, there is still that level of what's going to happen next that keeps you engaged in the game.
As you said, like, it can feel, especially in games like Melty Blood, like it's a very sort of one-player affair once it starts. But I think one of the interesting things about combos in games like Melty Blood, which have a lot of variables going on into how you can start things, is when you land that initial hit, there's this really interesting question of how well do you understand the system to take that hit that you landed in unideal situations and turn it into something good? Because it's very easy to learn. You get your ideal hit,
yeah,
you get your ideal combo, and that's good, and it deals like a really nice amount of damage. You never get that hit in a real match, though. And Melty Blood has a particularly high speed for its combos. So you have a very short time to decide what you are actually going to do to maximize your situation. And I think that test is really interesting as a player. And it creates a lot of very good moments as a spectator too. Like, you see someone get this really unusual, weird hit, and they end up taking what should be a very small amount of damage, and you're turning into a huge sweep.
The pace of the game is so frantic in some instances because, you know, the loose hit that you're talking about, to more clearly define what kind of weird hit, what a weird hit looks like, it's if two players jumped at each other, and let's say a hit traded in midair, but one of the players managed to recover ever so slightly quicker and has the wherewithal to dash forward in midair to continue the combo. Like, that's possible in a game like Melty Blood. It's not likely, but it's actually possible. And so for someone looking in, this kind of just looks like magic of just, oh, how did that? I guess the game just allows that. Oh, that's really cool, you know?
And one of the particular things that I like about Melty Blood is a particular system in regards to combos, which is called damage scaling. Damage scaling is very common for a lot of fighting games to use. As you do more hits in a combo, the combo's damage decreases, and that is based on what moves you did. Often very easy to hit with attacks, reduce the damage of the combo much more so overall. So if you use lots of light attacks, even if you do a lot of other stuff later, you'll have a lower overall damage output. What strikes me as really incredible about Melty Blood's implementation of the system is that when you do a combo, it's usually relatively easy to hit around 3,000 damage, which is about a third to a quarter of someone's life total.
Yeah, consider average health to be, I want to say, 9,000.
Yeah, between 9,000 and 11,000. So you can, with like relative ease from like a decent starting point, hit around 3,000 without a lot of issue. And then if you do like some fancy things, you can hit 4,000 with a lot of effort. But going beyond 4,000 is really hard. Like, you require so much extra effort, so much extra resources that for a lot of people, for a lot of the time, that's not very important. Like, it's not worth going to that level unless you're making a combo video or you're trying to weak out that last little bit of damage to score that win. And I think that's really cool for accessibility, because it means that once you pass this relatively low initial barrier, you can get 80% of the way there in terms of what damage output you need, compared to, say, a fighting game like Marvel vs. Capcom 3, where the base level of what you should be doing is so much lower than what you really have to do in a high level match. And what separates a good player from a bad player in Melty Blood is less how much damage can you do off one hit versus how much damage can you do off a suboptimal random hit. Can you hit that 3k off every successful hit, not can you hit that from a good ground series? And so the risk reward comes into that with the combo scaling too, because light attacks are easy to hit with, but severely scale the combo. If you start a combo with a heavy attack, you can hit 4k fairly easily, but you're not going to succeed with that hit unless you're very lucky or you've really like thought out the situation, which I think is something that is really clever.
So one of the things we alluded to earlier is that there aren't many things you can do on the side of the person getting hit, but there are certain situations in the game that allow you to use up all of your resources in terms of meter that you can use for special moves and break a combo. These are extremely rare. They probably happen once per round, if that. But it does exist.
Especially in Melty Blood. Various fighting games have similar mechanics, but in Melty Blood, this use is pretty rare because the situations that are required to set it up are really specific and are not entirely in the player's control.
In the conversation of risk versus reward, it is often better for you to take the damage because you know how much damage your opponent's capable of dishing out. It's so hard to cross that threshold over 5,000. So you can be pretty sure in most situations, oh, this is not going to kill me, and therefore choose to just hold back that resource because that resource is going to help you mount the comeback. It is much better to use this resource offensively than defensively.
And for an idea of like what those numbers might look like, you could use a full meter, which is worth about 3 supers or something, to mitigate about 3,000 damage. But you could use one super by itself to deal about 1,500 to 2,000 damage, or to like secure a nice bigger combo later perhaps. And there are lots of other ways you can use the meter aside from just raw supers as well.
At the end of a combo, that super might turn your 3,500 damage combo into a 4,000 damage combo, which helps. That small amount extra damage can eke out a win. And so this is, you know, a very simple system for a very fast game that really emphasizes turning loose hits into combos, into these single player scenarios where the opponent still has agency. They're still thinking about what to do, but for the most part, it's all up to the player executing the combo. Our next game asks the question, what if the player getting hit has even more agency? What would a system like that look like? And that game is Killer Instinct. So Killer Instinct was originally an arcade title that had a massive amount of success and was eventually ported into the Super Nintendo. The 2013 reboot became one of the premier Xbox One launch titles and was one of the reasons to get the console at all. The game was split into multiple seasons of support from the developers, where multiple characters were added and mechanics were changed up. And the first season was handled by Double Helix, where season 2 and 3 was handled by Iron Galaxy, totaling up to about 4 years of proper full dev support, leading to a massive community being formed behind this very unique feeling fighter.
And so a lot of fighting games that come out these days tend to fall in sort of two broad camps, more traditional like Street Fighter and King of Fighters, and or more in air quotes anime, which have a greater emphasis on like aerial movement and often much more elaborate combos. Killer Instinct is really not in either of these two camps. If it has to be in one, it's more in the Street Fighter side, but even then that's a disservice to both that style of game and Killer Instinct itself, because it stands out with a very rigid-ish, but in practice very like fluid combo system that hopefully you can go into more specific detail about, because I'm not so great at explaining this.
Okay, so let me attempt this, and this may go horribly because it's not super simple, but here's the gist of it. When you land a hit, you go into – it is called an opener, and it's called that because you use that to start your combo. This is what allows you to begin this very specific concept in Killer Instinct called a combo, and this is a very specific thing because it's made up of explicit components. From an opener, you do an auto double, where you hit one of the six buttons and it performs two attacks, which gives you enough time to add in a special move called a linker. Now, from a linker, you can add another auto double into another linker and so on and so forth. While you're doing this, you are building up not just damage on your opponent, but also potential damage on your opponent. And as this goes on, if you chain too many of these together, the game will decide, oh, you've done too much, and flip your opponent out. To prevent this from happening, what you can do instead is choose a certain point where instead of a linker, you perform an ender. This is a specific input where you use the heavies instead for your special move, and this cashes out the potential damage that you've accrued on your opponent. Does that sound roughly what a combo is?
That sounds roughly like what a combo is. There are a few extra little bits and pieces you can throw in there, but that doesn't really apply to the discussion we're going to have today.
It's a very complex system. If this sounds interesting to you, please go look this up. It's one of the most rigid and formulated combo systems out there, but it still leads to an amazing set of gameplay situations.
Well, before that, if you don't understand our description so far, the rest of this conversation will not function for you, in which case we're gonna put a link in the show notes to a video by Maximilian, Assist Me Killer Instinct, that has a pretty good rundown of Killer Instinct as a whole, but also specifically this combo system. And if you haven't followed us so far, we really advise that you have a look at that before listening on. But basically, Killer Instinct's big distinguishing point is that it encourages a high amount of counterplay, possibly to its detriment in some iterations of the series, but basically at any point during the doubles or the linkers, your opponent can press a button. And if they match the strength, they get to escape the combo, basically. And that's a very simple thing. There's some extra nuance in that since linkers can only be lights or mediums, you have a greater chance of beating the odds there. But just pure 33% guessing isn't really what this is, because each different strength of input has different outcomes. So Blue talked about the potential that you can cash out at the end of a combo. That potential is much higher if you used heavies in the doubles sections of the combos. But heavies are super slow. Everyone can react to them more or less once you've been playing the game for a long time. So there's that risk of, do I do this now? Because since they know I shouldn't do it, can I take the risk and do it without them expecting it? Or you can do lights, which is safer, and they probably can't respond to them unless they expect you to do a light.
If you're doing lights to be safe throughout most of your combos, your opponent might pick up on that and not react to anything, just mash out the combo, the light combo breaker.
And because Killer Instinct's combos are both very defined and very flexible, it really encourages players to vary up their combos quite a lot, which is both good for players as it keeps everything different and fresh and keeps them thinking about the combo system as opposed to memorizing five different strings. It also just helps it be a bit more watchable for viewers because things are changing up more often and it's not just the same bread and butter combo visually, even if it is in generalized structure.
It's also very volatile and explosive for spectators because, yeah, in theory, any character can do 60 to 70% of a character's health bar, but that's assuming your opponent allows you to do that. That's not likely, not in a high-level match especially.
But we should talk about the cost of a combo break, actually. So if you fail a combo break, then you have to be unable to do a combo break for 3 seconds. And combos in Killer Instinct can be a little bit long, so you might have a second chance. But the only reason you've got a second chance is because you've basically told your opponent you can do whatever you like.
And your opponent at that point can choose to just go, I'm going to hit you with as much potential damage as I can. And before you're allowed to break the combo again, I'm just going to end it and cash in that damage.
Which leads to a lot of like really interesting risk reward. But of course, if the game is about counterplay, the comboer, the person doing the combo, has the combo breaker counter, during which in their moves, they can input a command to basically, if they get combo breaked for that hit, they will counter the combo break and get to do a fresh combo for free, basically.
Remember we talked about in Melty Blood that there is something called damage scaling. Damage scaling sort of exists in this as well. The longer a combo does, the less damage each individual hit is going to build up into. Once you refresh the combo, that scaling starts from new, from scratch.
But of course, if you don't predict that they were going to counter your combo, you end up being in a bad position and they can usually get their own free combo on you. So there's lots of, do I do this now? Do I try and counter them? Will they counter me? And it keeps combos feeling like everyone is an active participant at all times in Killer Instinct, unless you made a mistake and got yourself locked out.
I've heard some people say that Killer Instinct is the fighting game with the most amounts of decisions per second. And because of the way this combo system works, I can definitely see that, and I can definitely agree with that. Even when you're getting hit, you're thinking, or you're trying to observe the situation, is there something I can react to? Is there something I can just kind of throw out? Do I think that I'm in enough danger that I should throw out something just to throw something out? Is not doing something the right move here because they're trying to predict a combo break? So many questions exist, and you'd think that the more free a system is, the more free form a combo system is, the more this kinds of interaction you get. But no, this back and forth thought comes from the fact that the combo system is so rigid. The fact that people have to do things in this certain order. And so your opponent is able to understand that, yep, the next thing that's going to come is a link. The next thing that's going to come is a double. When do I do something? Basically, the combo system's rigidity allows this interaction to happen.
Unlike usual fighting games, well, thanks to this like deep interplay between people, one of the distinct things about Killer Instinct compared to, say, Street Fighter or Melty Blood or anything else is that in those games, combos that are longer are always better, basically. In Killer Instinct, though, length of the combo you're doing is a real genuine choice, because whether you want something that is short and sweet and guaranteed is much more reliable than going for the long and elaborate thing that you can't guarantee. And so that keeps every aspect of the combo an aspect of interplay with the other person, which is pretty unique and pretty distinctive. For a game that does not have a lot of interplay with other people and your opponents, let's talk about Devil May Cry 5, the single player experience that is famous for its combos. Devil May Cry 5, the 2019 debut of the Devil May Cry series, bringing the series back to its roots in the old canon. Developed by Capcom, this series did much to develop the character action game as we know it today. It's very famous for its long and lengthy combos, of course, and its sense of style and its immense amount of player empowerment and flexibility. You're a lot more of an expert on this franchise than me, so why don't you lead with its flexibility specifically, perhaps?
Sure. So this can get all over the place, but let me focus specifically on Dante, the series' main protagonist throughout most of the series, at least. Dante in Devil May Cry 5 has basically every tool he's ever had throughout the entire series, which is a variety of guns, a variety of swords, and can swap freely between them in the middle of performing actions, in the middle of attacking, in the middle of defending and dodging and stuff like that. And on top of that, Dante also has 4 different forms/stances, which the game calls styles, that adds capabilities on top of this. So Gunslinger improves his guns, Swordmaster improves his sword, Trickster makes him dodge better, and Royal Guard gives him defensive options, like actually a defensive parry, which is hard to find in the game. You normally want to dodge out of the way. Very few things allow you to take a hit straight on. And Dante has the capability to do that. And that actually matters to the flexibility of the combo system in this game. And when I say combo, and when we're talking about combo in regards to Devil May Cry 5, this is much more of the control aspect of combo. Although it's just a single player game, you want to be able to control the environment in such a way that you are hitting enemies and reducing the numbers of the giant mobs placed in front of you while retaining control. And so what this might look like is if you approach a new mob of enemies, you might pick out target A, who might be the most dangerous among them because their attacks could deal the most damage. And so you start attacking them, and in the corner of your eye, you're looking at, you know, target B, who might have slow wind-up attacks. And so as you're comboing and keeping target A in lock stun, you know, hitting them and forcing them to flinch every time you hit them, you see this big wind-up attack, maybe swap immediately to Royal Guard, parry it, or swap to Trickster, dodge out of the way. That's the kind of flexibility that this game and this type of combo system gives the player. Does that make sense?
That makes sense. Yeah, so this sort of combo system gives you the power to do everything in kind of absurdly intense situations, which leads to that real sense of empowerment, because this is well beyond what we should expect that our skill level would let us do. Like, in a lot of games, you deal with smaller encounters, or you have, like, very different weaponry, whereas DMC is really focusing on that empowerment aspect. And we didn't talk about this earlier, but there's this important aspect to combos as empowerment in this game, which is combos as kinesthetics. Some people call it game feel. I prefer kinesthetics because the idea of kinetic aesthetics feels like a nicer term to me. But kinesthetics for games means, like, how good does it feel to do something, or how does it feel to do the things, and how does that tie into other aspects? And in DMC, like, doing combos, because it's so responsive to you and you can do what you like, it tends to feel like, the kinesthetics tend to feel very strong, very good, like you're in control of the situation all the time. At a very, like, deep aesthetic level, I guess.
Part of that is how responsive the controls are. In a lot of situations, if you're in the middle of an attack, you hit jump, you still cancel out of the attack to jump. And this is a thing in fighting games as well. How good does it feel to play a character often ties to how much control you have, how quickly. If you decide, no, I don't want to be doing this right this moment, I want to immediately go into a defensive motion, does the game allow you to do that? And Devil May Cry 5 has a really good feel for that. And that's actually a really large part of combos, because you can have rigid feeling combos where you just input the commands and then it just happens and you can't really change it once you've input something. And then you have the combos that allow you to, that allow you to cancel out of moves very dynamically and organic. DMC5 actually has a really good version of this.
Does DMC5 have a lot of moves that you can't cancel out of, or some moves that you can't cancel out of? Or
There are moves that you cannot cancel out of. And these are normally big haymaker moves where you have to commit to a large wind-up animation in order to land a big hit and run the risk of the enemy moving out of position or hitting you out of it. They do exist.
And that variation really helps them, like, feel powerful. Like, this is such, like, a commitment that you can't just get yourself out of it easily, which lends that a greater sense of weight and heft than beyond just what the animation allows you to do. And when we talked about this before, like, yes, this is a single player game, but we've talked about how in Melty Blood that often combos can be a bit of a single player experience, because ideally your opponent, if you're doing a combo right, can't respond. In DMC, you also mentioned you are playing at the best when your enemies can't really be doing anything.
When you have so much control over the situation that you see any potential threats coming to you and you either dodge out of the way and punish them for trying to attack you, or you just react and block it or something. You know where all threats are coming from and you are taking threats off the table by putting enemies in hitstun or taking a combo into the air out of the range of certain enemies. Things like that.
One thing I've just thought of, I was just thinking of a conversation with a friend about DMC5, and they are very good at the game compared to me. And they found that the initial playthrough on the highest difficulty was oddly paced, perhaps because they were too good at the game and thus combat wasn't lasting long enough per an encounter. Do you feel that was a real issue for DMC5, perhaps? Or that the skill level in the encounters can really change, like, the pacing of them to a possibly negative degree?
Yeah, it's a super interesting one, because if you got good at DMC 5 by playing DMC games previously, like DMC 4, for example, actually has a lot of carryover in terms of skill, in my opinion, then you're going to walk in going, oh, I know exactly what I want to do. I know exactly which upgrades I want to buy, and I know exactly what I want my character to be able to do early. The pacing always will feel weird in your first playthrough because you're unlocking a lot of abilities. You have to earn red orbs to unlock more repertoire. So that's part of it. Another part of it is that's maybe a bit more obvious, and possibly what your friend was alluding to is DMC has a combo gauge, right? You are told how stylish you are in the midst of a fight, and that increases based on how much variety of moves you do and not getting hit. It goes from D rank all the way up to triple S. So D, C, B, A, S, SS, and then SSS. In your first run, even on the higher difficulty that you're given access to, I don't think I got a single triple S rank in any of the fights. I think there may have been one or two opportunities, but basically most fights would not last long enough for you to be able to get, because you would run out of enemy health before you ran out of moves, and so you just don't get the opportunity to get up into the high ranks. And once you've played other DMC games, you kind of start to judge yourself based on how well your combos are doing in terms of that like rank feedback. It's like, yeah, I'm doing really well this fight because I'm at like S or SSS, and when you get hit and it drops immediately to B, it feels really bad because you're, oh, okay, cool, they broke my combo. That was a mistake on my part. I messed up. So maybe that's part of it.
I think that's something we haven't talked about much. Like, combos present this interesting space for a skill gap. Like, Melty Blood mitigates it through damage scaling. Killer Instinct mitigates it through player interaction and having, like, a very rigid structure. DMC5 being a single-player sort of score-attack-ish game, I guess, doesn't need to mitigate it outside of pacing, but...
It does, right? Because that's why enemies have lower health on the lower difficulty, so that you don't feel like you're doing poorly, because you can still dispatch enemies in a reasonably timed manner. It's a very roundabout way of saying it, and it's probably not what the designers would have intended going into it with that kind of mentality, but that's the effect of it, I feel. I think another thing we've talked about with DMC is that it's a very good learning game. It teaches you a lot of its mechanics along the way as you're in there for the ride of the story, and part of DMC is just learning how to play the game, learning how to play DMC.
A lot of that initial playthrough for all these games is really the tutorial, because if you are given all those tools immediately, it's incredibly overwhelming, I imagine, just because keeping in mind what all those moves even are would be a lot. So moving from, we've only talked about real-time games so far, we're going to look at combos in perhaps a more turn-based context, looking at Bravely Default. Bravely Default, a Square Enix-produced retro throwback RPG for the 3DS, released originally in 2012 in Japan, and with a slightly improved version called For the Sequel, released worldwide in 2013. Originally intended as a sequel to the excellent Final Fantasy IV Heroes of Light, it became its own distinct thing that features a job system reminiscent of Final Fantasy V. But distinct of Bravely Default and the focus of our conversation today is its titular Bravely Default system, which is all about managing turns. But the very simple rundown, basically, as opposed to other RPGs where every round you have one turn, in this game you get one brave point every turn. You can expend it immediately to do a single action. You can use multiple brave points if you've collected them to do more actions. And you can go into a deficit of up to 4 points. So you can do 4 actions potentially in a single turn. Or you can store them up to a maximum of 4 points, so if you were to use all the actions, you would go back to the default 0. If you store a point, you get a bonus defense. If you use points into deficit, you will take more damage until you get back to neutral. What's distinct about this compared to the other games we've talked about is that it allows you players to do a lot of consecutive actions. But since it's turn-based, there's a lot more like opportunity to really plan and consider the impacts of these things. That sound about right to you?
Yep. Question, because it's been a while, but when you're in deficit, you can't take an action, right? When it comes to your turn, you just gain the point that you would have gotten and then it passes on.
That's right. You just gain the point that you would have gained.
So going into deficit not only makes you take more damage if you're hit, but it also removes you from the turn order for a while. Like, effectively, not explicitly, but it effectively removes you from turn order, which means that you're just standing there doing nothing.
An example downside to this would be, let's say that on your first turn of a boss encounter, you get every character to go into maximum deficit. You do that, and your opponent just gets 3 turns for free to just attack you until you've gained back all those points without penalty, while you are all suffering a penalty of extra damage.
So it's a huge risk, and it's mitigated by the fact that you know it. You know what this risk is, and you know, once you get comfortable with the system, you understand when it is sensible to take this risk.
And so this really looks at like combos as a resource, as a tool to manage, because sometimes you just want to use 1 point to just get a little bit of healing in. So in other RPGs, sometimes you have these really cool things you want to set up and do, but your opponent keeps getting in the way of setting that up.
If you have a multi-turn quote-unquote combo, because that's what it is. It's a combination of moves back-to-back. For example, a debuff into a big powerful attack. Sometimes they shrug off the debuff before your next turn comes around. You have to apply that again.
Whereas here, you can apply that debuff and the very next action is doing the attack. And that's very satisfying. The game is balanced around the system, of course, but it feels like you're cheating in that beautiful little way that a lot of games let you cheat design-wise, that makes you feel like you're besting the system and working outside the system, even though you're working within it.
Certain enemies can also take advantage of the brave system and themselves go into deficit, and it is terrifying when you see them queue up the moves and then just do it back to back. Doesn't happen very often, but it's very useful as like dramatic tension in a fight.
Being able to store time for later also allows you to get out of common bad RPG loops. So another common like difficult situation in RPG is when a character dies in your party. Often players go through the loop of reviving them, then getting attacked, reviving again. Here you can literally queue up, revive, heal, and then do some other things if you really wanted to.
In a lot of RPGs, I've always felt like the defend action feels like just hit me with whatever you want. Whereas here, because it not only increases your defense, but gives you BP, because that's what you do instead of attacking, you just defend. It's very much more of a hold action or go into Overwatch, if that's a term that you know someone might be familiar with, you know, in other RPGs, which is to say you're just biding your time. You're waiting for an opportunity and you're, yeah, in this case, building up resource.
And because timing matters in this game, or like when you do things matters, it really makes time feel much more like a resource you have to consider. And it stops things feeling like free actions. Like it stops even just straight up attacking, feeling like a purely free action, because you could have defended, you could have saved that point to do like more in a turn later when maybe you need to do more things.
Have to make a decision. Is an attack that's going to deal 100% damage, let's say, worth taking now or storing that to be able to do 250% damage on the next turn, for example? And that's not clear cut which way is better. It depends on the encounter and the context.
Of course, this system does have the downside of, in a lot of random encounters, the correct move is usually everyone braves for 4 points, going to maximum deficit, and just attacks the opponent, and the encounter ends instantly. But that is fine, I guess, because random encounters in JRPGs are unfortunately not really bastions of high strategy. It's really just simplifying what you're already going to do and condensing it down to a shorter time frame, which is more or less what this system is. It's just allowing you to do it without interruption.
And having said all that, that's still valuable, because a player who knows how to do that knows how to take advantage of the system, which for the designers, that's what you want your players to learn, how to internalize the system you've given them, to take advantage where they can find it. Because eventually you're going to throw a boss in their way where they can't just do that. And so they're going to have to then think on their feet and find something else that they can do.
And the sequel actually posits an interesting challenge in those random encounters. So I don't know if you've played the sequel, Bravely Second.
I have not, no.
Basically, there's a simple mechanic. If you kill the enemy team in one turn, you get a chance to do another battle for an increased multiplier of experience from all the battles you fought in this like string. So it encourages you to use enough BP to kill in turn one, but not so much that you will be unable to do anything next time. So you've got to like really maximize your use of BP to get as many strings as you can. And this really speeds up grinding if you're clever. I think this is a really nice extra bit of nuance, is that if you understand this resource well, you can speed up grinding through a method that is not just, I know the answer, doing it. You have to be a little bit clever with it. It's not super difficult to optimize, but it's more interesting than traditional grinding.
Where traditional grinding often devolves into run around until you get an encounter, mash, accept to attack automatically, and then rinse and repeat. This puts a bit more thought into it.
Bravely Second, Default are looking at how you use time as a resource. Our next game is really looking at how it uses the time-limited aspect of combo systems and encourages players to act in certain ways. We're going to look at Final Fantasy XIII. Final Fantasy XIII is the least controversial and most universally beloved title in Square Enix's Final Fantasy series. It was released in late 2009 in Japan or early 2010 in the rest of the world. There is a lot that we could talk about with in regards to Final Fantasy XIII, but I really want to focus on one specific mechanic in the game, which is stagger. In this combat system, basically characters play more or less on autopilot, and you can change what roles they are playing in the combat system. And the stagger system is a system to encourage players to consistently attack. It's a bar that fills up when you're attacking and goes down when you're not. And once it hits a critical point, there is a massive increase in the damage you can deal to an opponent. When they're in this stagger state, the amount of damage that is increasing can also increase dramatically. And so you are presented with a very simple choice early on in each combat as to how much you focus on filling out that gauge and going for the immense damage. Every healer you have in your crew is mitigating that potential amount of damage, basically, and mitigating how much you're making of that situation. So 13 is using this stagger meter, which functions as a sort of combo meter. How many consecutive attacks are you doing without breaking it? And it's encouraging you to play in a more risky, intense way, as opposed to sitting back, playing the sort of default fight, fight, heal mentality. Did you get a chance to like watch or observe this system?
I did.
What did you think?
It's pretty elegant. And yeah, look, a lot of times dominant strategies arise in games, and unfortunately, dominant strategies are very rarely fun. JRPGs and, you know, these kinds of RPGs in general, the dominant strategy is to be safe. So this stagger mechanic and system just pushes you to, as you said, be more risky and, more importantly, play in a more fun way.
Because the game is a lot more fun when you're constantly changing up what every character's role in combat is. Whereas you could play through this game potentially in a fairly simple party of like an attacker, a healer, and another attacker potentially, or a buff type character. And you can get through a lot of battles like this, but it would take a battle from going from a minute or two to maybe 3 or 4 minutes. Like, it would be a significantly longer and more tedious battle. And a lot of bosses you probably couldn't beat because their healing would outpace your damage, if they have healing.
Can enemies attack while they're staggered?
Yes. So stagger does not knock them out. Stagger simply puts them in a state where they have significantly less defense. So in the UI, the stagger meter is both a meter and a percentage number. The percentage number is the damage that they are now taking. And usually for a lot of enemies, the stagger meter is getting it up to 200% damage. And once you trigger the stagger, it goes up to maybe 400 or 500% damage. Like, it immediately switches to a higher number when you hit that trigger point.
I believe as I was looking at the mechanics, it said that by default, activating stagger state adds an extra 100%. And then you have modifiers on top of that.
Yes. And different attacks can increase that attack differently. So there are two attacking classes, one of which does more stagger percent, but less overall damage. The other one doing more actual damage, but filling up the bar less, but mitigating how slowly it unfills. So you can go for a hardcore, like three quick stagger characters together, rapidly trying to get that up before anyone gets too hurt, and then switching to a more consistent damage output. Maybe you slowly fill up the stagger meter with a healer in back, and once it's filled, you go hardcore for maximum damage, no healing allowed when you are laying on that damage. And different bosses mandate different actions, which is really interesting.
And all of this creates interesting things to think about in a combat situation. Because the enemy isn't helpless, they're just at a lower defense. That means that if you just push too hard on damage and the enemy is capable of killing you, that might sneak up on you and, you know, catch you off guard.
And that happens a lot. I mean, maybe I'm just terrible at the game, but I have definitely had instances where I've pushed a little bit harder than maybe I should have, because I really wanted to get more out of that 500% damage increase. And I didn't heal quite enough, and someone died, and then I couldn't quite revive everyone in time, and that was it. The boss encounter was done, and I lost.
Cascades, yeah. Like, your failures cascade in this kind of system.
And that's actually another thing. Like, in this game, success is quick and failure is quick. Like, if you are not doing the right thing, you know pretty quickly that you have just made bad decisions. There are ways that you can survive a long time in this game and when you're not playing well, but generally it's either fast success or fast failure, which helps a player's understanding what they are doing.
So there's still counterplay at work here. You are given the tools to completely overrun your enemy, but it requires setup, and it then requires you to commit a certain amount of damage, which cannot in turn be healing, which cannot be in turn a defensive action. And so there is a lot to consider in terms of which combination of moves do I want to do to both get through the encounter as quickly as possible while also keeping myself you know, safe or safe enough to get through the encounter. And that requires an amount of control and understanding of the system's mechanics.
And 13 does this in a very high-paced environment. There is not a lot of time. There is not enough time to even pick all your commands. The game is, every character is a class, and those classes have very set AI patterns that are easy to understand, but are not in the player's control per se. And it's very constant switching. Like maybe every few seconds in difficult encounters, you might be changing your AI setups. For traditional RPGs, is a very high pace to be playing something at.
Yeah, so it's a very different and frantic feeling game, even as compared to, especially as compared to Bravely Default.
And the difference between success and losing can be like starting your healing mode a second later. Like that pushing just that little bit extra could be the thing that lets you break your opponent now versus in a few rounds time, because the meter will start decreasing if you heal a little bit earlier.
The game entices you to keep pushing because once you hit stagger, you only have a limited time and there's a maximum amount of duration you can stack onto that. So you can't keep them in stagger state forever. You want to make the most of the stagger state you have now. If it's a boss fight, you might end up having to, you know, go for multiple staggers.
You do a lot of staggers.
Yeah, so you always push.
And yeah, this system creates an interesting ebb and flow to boss encounters particularly, because you have these like, I am maintaining a holding pattern. Okay, I'm near the burst. I need to like just make that last push. You make it, maybe you go back to a healing mode, a partial healing mode, just to get yourself back on your feet after that last push. It's a very good combat system. I wish the rest of the game held up a lot nicer to work with this combat system, but I think this is a lot to encourage players to act in a way that makes the game the most fun it can be.
With encouragement and positive rewards as opposed to discouraging unfun behavior.
Yes. Like it's not just going to make healing bad to stop you doing fight, fight, heal. Healing is very powerful and good. If you make a team of pure healers, you will not ever die. You won't do anything, but you won't die. And you can get a party from 0 to 100 pretty quickly in this game. Damage is very quick in all directions. Numbers are very quick in all directions. To a fault, the high numbers can be a bit comedic, but it does really make you make your choices. I think that's probably about all we've got to say for 13. Then we're going to go into some closing thoughts about what we've talked about for combos.
All right, so this episode, we talked about combos in a number of games. Two fighting games, one character action game, and two RPGs. A lot of this discussion focused around how combos act as power fantasy, the kind of structure that you see in these games, how they approach it differently, and what they give to the player in terms of feel, game kinesthetics. The first game we talked about was Melty Blood, which is very much a typical combo structure that you would find in most fighting games, which is to say that once you get hit, you're pretty much getting hit. There's still a lot of thought involved and nuance involved with what the opponent is doing in this time, but for the most part, the combo portion, very single player. And to kind of contrast that, we also talked about Killer Instinct, which is another fighting game. But this time, the fighting game's combo system and structure has this rigidity that allows both players to know when certain decision points are coming up and to give a limited amount of decision space for interplay. And this ends up leading into a very dynamic game feeling system with a very rudimentary combo route for most players to understand and learn. And then we moved into a bit more of the character action game with Devil May Cry 5. And this one really exemplifies what it feels like to just have control over a situation if you understand the combo system and what your character is capable of.
And then we moved away from real time into RPGs with Bravely Default, which looked at combos and time as a resource to be managed, as opposed to something that is always flowing constantly, and making decisions based on whether it's now is the time to take the risk or not. And then we ended up with Final Fantasy XIII, which took some of these ideas of risk-rewarding combos that Killer Instinct and a few others emphasized, but instead using these combos in real time as a way to encourage players to play a game in the most fun way possible, as opposed to playing in ways that may function, but would be less than ideally fun to play, using the stagger system. So I hope you enjoyed our discussion on combos. We had a good time preparing this list, and I think we had some great discussions tonight. If there's a combo system that you want to talk to us about that you think did something unique or distinctive compared to these five games, you can email us or talk to us on Twitter. I'm at Link6616.
And I am at BlueCrims, BlueCrims.
Or you can talk to the show at Platt and Pitt. So until next month, we bid you farewell.
Thank you for listening.